Hello and welcome to the Canadian Baseball Network podcast. I'm Peter Bean and I'll be your host. On today's episode, the second in our Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame series, we profile the voice of summer, Tom Cheek. To give us an understanding of who Tom was, inside and outside the booth, I spoke with his wife, Shirley Cheek. Shirley has become the voice of the Cheek family since Tom's passing. In today's interview, I asked Shirley about who Tom Cheek the man was. We talk about how they met and how Tom got his start in broadcasting. I also asked Shirley about Tom's favorite call, his favorite ballpark, and even his favorite ballpark food. Shirley shares some great stories about Tom, including some of his funnier moments in the booth and at home. As a longtime fan of Tom's, I felt privileged to have the chance to speak to Shirley about Tom and learn about who he was on a personal level. It was one of my favorite interviews, and I think if you love Tom as I do and are still moved when you hear his voice, you'll especially enjoy this interview. After speaking with Shirley, I feel like I know Tom better, and I hope you will as well. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll listen to the interview with Shirley Cheek. Thank you very much for being here, Shirley. I very much appreciate you taking the time to speak with me today.
Oh, you're welcome, Peter. It was nice of you to call me.
Okay, I'd like to start back at the beginning when you met Tom. How did the two of you meet?
He was in the Air Force, and he was stationed at Plattsburgh, New York, and my hometown is about 25 miles from Plattsburgh on the Canadian side in Quebec.
And how long after you met did you marry?
Well, I knew him for about a year and a half, but we only dated for about 4 months, and then we were married.
A quick love story, huh?
Quick love story.
When Tom was younger, did he play baseball or any other sports?
He played basketball. I think he played some baseball, but primarily he played basketball.
Now, other than his family and baseball, what did Tom love?
Fishing. He loved to fish. He loved to go back to Pensacola and surf fish. That's what he liked the most, was surf fishing.
All right. Now, he began his career in broadcasting after you were married, correct?
Yes.
How did it start? What was his first gig?
His first gig was in Plattsburgh, New York, and he had gone to the Cambridge School of Broadcasting in Boston and needed a job. We were kind of out of money, and the opportunity came, and he actually left the Cambridge School of Broadcasting probably a month before graduation. So he just needed the job. So
that's the way it is for a lot of us.
Mm-hmm.
Did he have an idol in the industry when he was young and new to broadcasting, someone he either modeled himself after or looked up to?
No, I used to hear him talk a lot about Kurt Gowdy and, you know, that sort of thing. But I never really heard him say I idolize anybody. He just liked radio and he liked, you know, talking to the folks.
Now, Tom's job with the Blue Jays was his first full-time broadcasting gig with a professional baseball team, right?
Yes. Well, he had done for the Expos, but the first job, I mean, he worked for the Expos for 3 years, I guess, doing Wednesday night home games, and he did a short little stint with Baltimore Orioles, but it was just on a trial basis. You know, he's kind of the man in the stands, if you know what I mean, and, you know, just talking to fans, I guess, and it didn't fly, let's put it that way.
Do you remember the day he got the job with the Blue Jays and what he said and how he felt on that day?
Yes, it was the end of November when we got the phone call that he was going to be the person, because I do remember it was either December 1st or December 2nd. I want to say it was December 2nd when we came up to Toronto for a press conference. So it would be sometime, actually probably early November when we found out. So he was quite excited to see that he had obtained this job.
Other than the Expos, had you and Tom had much experience in Canada before this job?
Well, I was born and raised in Canada. So, you know, when he got out of the service, he was familiar with Canada. And he actually rode with my father, who was heavy into politics, local politics, you know, and took the votes, got the voters to vote, and got the different canisters to take down to the to be counted and stuff like that. And he drove around with my dad before he had a job, and enjoyed that all around that part of Montreal and in that area.
Okay, I wanted to ask you about some of Tom's favorites. Mm-hmm. First and foremost, what was Tom's favorite game that he called?
Gosh, that's a tough one. Probably the 93 World Series. And probably Dave Steve's no-hitter. Those would be two that would stand out to me. There are so many, but I would think the top one on his list would probably be, say, in Joe Carter in the home run.
Did Tom have a favorite ball player?
I don't think so. He liked Alfredo Griffin. He always would say he was such a nice man, and he always was happy to see him in other ballparks when he became a coach and that sort of thing. He liked, you know, he's a very good friend of Buck Martinez. Tom Henke, I don't think he had a favorite, but anyone that he would say, you know, talk about would be Alfredo Griffin and what a nice person he was.
Do you know what his favorite ballpark was?
I think he liked Fenway for the structure of it and the configuration to broadcast from, or, you know, he knew that it wasn't the greatest vantage point, but I think he liked the configuration of the ballpark.
Okay, when he was in the booth, do you know what his favorite ballpark snack was?
Oh, gosh. probably popcorn.
And did he have a favorite team before the Blue Jays?
Well, when he was a kid, you know, growing up in Pensacola, Florida, he really liked the Cleveland, because I think Early Wynn was playing for Cleveland, and the year that their team won 100 games, and then they lost out in the playoffs. I think they had a little idol session, and he talked. I think the first time he saw Early Wynn when he met him as his broadcast partner was, "You owe me $5," or whatever it was he had bet for. Probably it was $2, you know, or 25 cents. I don't know, but Cleveland, and he liked Boston Red Sox. But I don't say he had a favorite team. But back as a kid, probably it was Cleveland at that particular era.
Okay, would Tom say that his iconic touch 'em all Joe call was his best call, or do you think he'd pick a different one?
I don't think he would pick a different one. I think he would say that was one of his best calls.
What about you?
I think that was his best call. You know, there are so many that I thought he did well in, but that one was such a natural, you know, he could visualize Joe as he was jumping around the bases. He was trying to mentally tell him, "Don't forget to touch them all." He said he looked like a kangaroo jumping around the bases, and he was trying to give him mental telepathy and say, make sure you touch all the bases so it counts, you know.
When he spoke to you that night after that game, how did he describe that moment to you?
He was just, his adrenaline was just over the top. I mean, he was just so high. But I don't think he really fazed him on how how that call came out until so many people started talking about it. To him, it was just, that's the words that came to his mouth. Any game that he called, however the home run call was or however a game ended, it's how it came out of his mouth. He had never practiced that this is going to be my signature call. So I think it was years later, or, you know, as the years went on, is how profound that home run call became.
With regards to the 92 win, I read something, a quote from Jerry Howarth, where Jerry said that Tom was very emotional in 92 when the Jays won, that he had teared up that evening over the win. Was that common for Tom? Was he a really emotional guy?
He could be. Yes, he could be. Very emotional. It meant so much to him. Like he said, I'm working for a World Series ring also, like I want this club. Even though he tried not to, there was a bit of a homerism. I mean, there was no doubt about it. I think every broadcaster at every major league team would say they were pulling for their own team, their own home team. He tried to be fair, but he would get emotional. He wanted that team to win. He wanted the Blue Jays to succeed.
Tom really felt like that team was his, didn't
He thought it was his baby. He really did. He loved talking about the Blue Jays. He went all over Canada in the off season talking about the Blue Jays, wherever they, asked him to go in the early years. And sometimes he would say, oh, not again. But in the end, when he got there, he loved it. He loved talking about the ball club.
Is he the type of guy who just talked baseball all the time, even outside of work?
He would talk about baseball all the time, and he'd always have a rapt audience. And people, when we'd go back to Vermont, we always usually stopped there back in the fall. That's where we had spent 16 years and still have friends to this day. And, they wanted to hear of the baseball stories, and Tom was a willing participant. So he would always tell, a lot of the funny stories, about baseball. That's what he would talk about, not about statistics and about, what happened in such a game. It would be the stories of he and Early on the road, or something Early had told him, or some other ball player, or what happened on the golf course, all related to the ballpark, ball club.
Can you share one of your favorites of those stories that Tom would tell about the ballpark or about the game or anything like that?
Well, I guess the one funny story was every day Tom would walk, drive by on the Kew, or the Gardner rather, Christie's, that big tower. It said Christie's Cookies. I don't know whether you remember that. I don't think
I
it's there
do.
anymore. And one day, I think they had to announce there were so many people here from the Rotary Club. There were groups that were in, and they would go down the list. And it came to one with so many people from Christie's Cookies, and he said, "Are Christie's Cookies still around?" The next day, he went into work, and there was a huge cardboard box with every kind of Christie cookie you could imagine. That was a funny story. We told him next time, go for the Mercedes. That was a good story, and I think the most famous story was the. And I was home listening to the radio, and I was just in hysterics laughing. Was when the seagull backed into the booth, he said, and kind of, as he would say, pooped on his scorecard. So he was still livid about that when he came home. He had to show me. He'd cut a hole out of the scorecard to show me. Well, look, he was just so mortified that this seagull had backed into his window. It was a funny story, and the way he told it, my neighbor called me up, and we were just hysterical laughing.
Oh, I wish I'd heard that one.
Yeah, it was funny. A lot of people have commented to me, remember the seagull?
All right, I want to ask you why you believe that Tom is so loved by Canadian baseball fans. What it was about him that just made him so important to all of us growing up listening to him.
I think that Tom, he was a big presence when he came into the room. His physical size, his booming voice, and his folksy way of talking to people. He didn't talk down to his fans or to the fans. He tried to draw them into his delivery. And I think that fans just grew up just loving, they could visualize the game before them. He made it sound like he was telling them a story.
All right, I'd like to read you a quote from Denny Matthews after Tom's induction into Cooperstown was announced before I ask you the next question. This is what Denny said. Tom was very proud of his streak, but once, about 3 or 4 years before his streak ended, he told me, "I have very few regrets in my life, but one would be letting the streak go so long. Do you realize how many family things I've missed? Weddings, high school functions only happen once. There are games every day." My question is, did Tom struggle with this often during the streak?
No, I don't think so. He did struggle over my daughter graduating from Humber College. And I remember we had friends in from Pensacola, Florida. They finally made a trip up to Toronto. And he wanted to go, and it was missing that game. And he always, it wasn't a streak at that time. He just felt so dedicated that he had to be there, that, you know, this was his job. And so this friend, he went with Tom to the ball game, and his girlfriend came with Lisa and I to her graduation. And when it finished, we went, drove from Humber and drove over to Sky Dome at that time. And the game was just finished, and we went out and celebrated her graduation. So that was probably the one big regret that he had, was that, why did I do that, you know? Why did I, years later, why did I not just take the day off?
Now, I've heard you comment before about the outpouring of support after the Cooperstown announcement. Can you tell me about those days after it was announced that Tom had won the Frick Award, and just what it was like, and the phone calls that you got?
Oh, gosh. It was, I think, the first day and a half, 2 days, the phone never stopped ringing. And emails. I had so many people contact me by emails. Many, you know, I usually save all of them. And just such nice words and nice thoughts, and people on Facebook that they're just fans and have contacted me on Facebook if they couldn't get me through my own email, just telling me, you know, what it meant to them and how they had voted every year. One person in particular was Kirby Barber. Kirby Barber is just a fan, but every year for 7 years, he walked people through how to vote and reminded them daily, don't forget to vote for Tom. So people like that were just so important, and the personal friends that called us, you know. So it was a couple of very emotional days for me.
Were you surprised at all by it? I mean, I know we all know how much Tom was loved, but was the sheer number of calls and the outpouring of support at all surprising, or was it more just expected, knowing who he was and how loved he was?
It wasn't expected. Surprising? Not, well, yes and no. I mean, you know, there were so many people that contacted me that have always stayed in touch with me. I mean, I'm blessed with so many of the Blue Jay family. By that, I mean past coaches and players and, you know, so many of them still keep in contact with me. And they were so excited for Tom, you know, like Galen Sisko and John Sullivan and Cito Gaston, Jeff Ross. They were the people that this meant as much to them, I believe, as it did to me. Howie Starkman, you know, Pat Gillick. I mean, I think that they all are living this. In Tom's, what happened to Tom, it's meant as much to them.
How many family and friends are attending the ceremony with you at St. Mary's this weekend?
Well, at St. Mary's, I have 16 people, family and friends, probably about 20 of us all together, maybe 25. And then there are other friends that are going to be in the audience, you know, so... not as many as in Cooperstown.
Now, are you speaking this weekend?
I'm letting my son, Jeff, speak this weekend. I just couldn't come up with two speeches. And he really wanted to do Cooperstown, and I'm not sure I can do it. But I said, Jeff, you know, we've had a lot of emotion going on in our house, in our family this past few months. My brother-in-law is ill, and... I've spent a lot of time up in North Carolina in Mooresville with, you know, helping my sister-in-law. She's visually impaired. That's one of Tom's twin sisters. So they were going to come up this, you know, to St. Mary's, but both of his sisters, they're unable to come. I mean, it's not a great situation right now.
I'm sorry. How has it been for you and your family with all the requests, the phone calls, the interviews such as this? How has it been to deal with all of that lately?
Well, yesterday I had an interview, and Lisa was here with me, and so this fella came right to the house. But she kind of filled in some of the points if I missed a point. And as far as my son, where he works in North Carolina, he works for a pharmaceutical company. His district just boss sent out a note to the man that hired him, higher up than his district supervisor, to three men, and sent a note. Jeff is going to be speaking on behalf of his father this weekend, accepting the induction, into St. Mary's, and he'll be throwing out the first pitch at the ballpark on the second. And I thought that was really nice of his boss to do that for him. To recognize that this is quite an honor.
That is nice. I was talking to Bob Elliott, about Tom, just trying to learn some stories about Tom that I might not already know. And Bob told me an interesting one about how Tom used to love to bring home a lot of the stuff they gave away at the ballparks.
Mm-hmm.
Did he bring home a lot of that stuff?
Yeah, he did bring home, things. If they gave them at the ballpark, he would, he would make sure there was something to bring home to the kids. And so they had a lot of Blue Jay stuff, and so did the neighbors. The neighbors liked it probably more than my kids, to be honest.
Did he ever have a favorite one, like one little bobblehead promotional item or anything that he really cherished that he kept for himself?
I don't think so. I don't think I have a favorite, and... I don't think for him he has a favorite either. It was just, I wouldn't say there was any favorite.
Okay. The last thing I want to ask you, Shirley, is if you could tell me something about Tom that we wouldn't know. Anything.
Well, I don't know. His life was like an open book. I don't know. He, he grew up in, about Pensacola, Florida. He grew up there. He was a Navy brat. His father was in the Navy. He was very proud of his dad and his accomplishments, but they were, his dad wasn't around for most of his adult life from the age 11. They divorced, but they always had something there. He was very proud of his dad being in the Battle of Midway. Dad was a pilot in the Navy. And I think, but Tom personally, I don't know.
Did he have any quirks? Any little things about him that were odd or funny or different?
Well, there was one funny story. Tom quirks. He loved to garden. There was something he liked to do. He didn't do a lot of gardening, but he loved to plant pepper plants and tomato plants and watch them grow. He would go down and get ones that were already started. And this is a funny story. He planted them, and he was going to California. I think it was on one of those 11, 12-day trips. So they were right outside the kitchen window, and he said, "Now, Shirley, you have to remember to water these plants every day." And every day, Tom would call me, two, three, four times a day in the morning. That's the thing I missed the most about Tom was the phone calls. I missed a lot of things, but the phone calls, were always there. Anyway, he'd say, "Did you water my plants?" And I said, "Oh, yes, Tom, they're growing and growing." So my partner in crime, my neighbor, the night before he was coming home, we said we'd seen some little tomatoes and we'd seen some little peppers on it. We went out to the store and we got some hot peppers and some little cherry tomatoes and we wired them onto his plants. The next morning, he got in the wee hours of the morning, he came down and he looked out the kitchen window and his eyes almost popped out of his head. He could see these red tomatoes and these peppers hanging, and he got running out the kitchen door and he's looking. And Lisa, my daughter, and I were just, it was all we could do. And he looked around at us and all of a sudden it caught on. He said, "Oh my gosh." I can't take full credit for that. I have to say my friend Elsie and I did that.
That's a great one.
That is a great one.
Yeah, that is.
Oh, he just was, "Have you watered them every day?" Every day I'd get this phone call once or twice, "Have you taken care of my plants?" It was really hysterical.
Oh, that is a
little gullible, let's say that.
Makes for a good joke, though, right?
He takes a good joke. He liked to tell a joke, and he liked to have a prank pulled on him. So he'd get mad, you know, like everybody would, but then he'd laugh about it. So.
Was he a prankster himself?
Yeah, to a certain degree. Yes, he was, yeah.
All right, Shirley, I really want to thank you for taking the time to chat with me today. I really, really appreciate it, and I hope you have a fantastic weekend in St. Mary's and again in Cooperstown later in the summer.
Well, we're going to try to. We're going to make the best of it, and we wish Tom's sisters were able to be there, but health issues have made it not possible, and we'll just have to hope for Cooperstown now. So,
well, here's hoping.
Yeah, okay, very good. Thanks for calling.
Thank you so much. You have a fantastic day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that's it for today's episode. I'd like to thank Shirley Cheek for taking the time to speak with me in what is a very busy and likely emotional time for her and her family. I'd also like to thank Scott Crawford in the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame for working with us to produce these episodes this week. I'd like to thank the Isotopes for the music for our show and Effective Business Video for the production. We'll be back tomorrow with an interview with another 2013 Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame inductee, Rob Ducey. Look for that episode tomorrow. After that, we'll also speak with Bill Humber, baseball historian, about each of the 2013 Hall of Fame class. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, @CDMBaseball, and give us a like on Facebook, too. Thanks for listening to the Canadian Baseball Network podcast, and we'll see you in St. Mary's.